meeting of the Amherstburg Council to order, and we have with us, of course, we have Pastor Barry Antle from the Amherstburg Community Church. I would ask if you would stand, and he would open up with a word of prayer. Pastor Antle, please.
Thank you, Mr. Father, we just want to take this time to begin this meeting with prayer, to commit this time to you and ask for your wisdom, your insight. Ask, Lord, that all the business discussed tonight would be done with clarity, with understanding, and in a way that is honorable to you and to each person gathered here. And I just thank you for the mayor and the council members and for each person gathered to be a part of this meeting tonight, to just move this forward and to add to the blessing that it is to live in such a beautiful town. Just thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Good evening, and again, let me welcome everyone here this evening. I would suggest at this particular time the council has there anyone, any pecuniary interests they wish to declare at this time? Seeing none, we'd allow that to be entered into the minutes and normal procedure. If perhaps during the course of this meeting one finds themselves to be in conflict, notification of the chair, and we certainly will have that entered into the minutes. That being said, we come upon the minutes of our previous meetings. What is your pleasure relative to those minutes, Councilor Pilon?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the minutes as presented.
It's been moved by Councilor Pilon. There is support for that motion. Councilor DePasquale supports that motion. Any discussions, any comments, errors, or omissions? Hearing none, all in favor? Opposed? Motion is then carried. That brings us to the presentations.
The first presentation is of a heritage plaque to John McDonald and Elizabeth McDonald for the 1822 Boyle Smith House.
And John and, of course, Elizabeth, if you look forward, this, of course, is the congratulations to you both.
Yes.
How are you?
Good.
Take over, right?
The next presentation by Val Ireland, Canada Post, regarding...
Move receipt of that presentation.
It's been moved by Councillor Sutton, supported by Councillor Davies. Any further discussions? All in favor? Motion is carried.
The second presentation by Val Ireland, Canada Post, regarding proposed changes to civic addressing in the McGregor area.
Certainly. You can just press that button, Val, if you would. The light to come on there?
Yeah. Mr. Mayor Hirst and members of the council, I wish to thank you very much for giving us this opportunity to present to you today. My name is Val Ireland from Canada Post, and I'm going to give you a brief overview information session regarding civic addressing. This is a proposal for conversion to civic addresses in the McGregor area. Canada Post is a business partner, a community partner committed to our customers, our employees, contractors, and suppliers. Some of our routes are over 8 hours in McGregor, and they need to be addressed as it relates to safety for our employees. And also, we're important for the communities that we serve as well. Delivery and addressing. An address is a first step in building successful delivery networks. Canada Post is but one of several partners that enable numerous municipal services. Our established address database helps our customers communicate to do businesses with residents in the communities, and we are an infrastructure partner, similar to the utilities. So, brief overview. In many rural areas across the country, residents still use a postal supplied address instead of their civic address to receive their mail. These mailing addresses were provided many years ago, and customers who did not yet have a civic address, for example, RR2 or Site 32 Compartment 6, those are the types of addresses that they have used. This system would rely heavily on our local delivery agents, mainly a knowledge sort, where they sort by name. And it makes the job of delivering the mail very difficult, especially if the relief person comes in, because all the knowledge is in the regular person's head versus on a case. Many mailers are now using only first initials also to mail things to customers because of privacy issues. And this can become very problematic when you deliver to individuals in the same area who have the same last name and the same first initial. With our technology today, used to prepare the mail, as well as increased use of the internet for online shopping and locating services, the use of a postal address is becoming increasingly more and more challenging for everyone, from residents to local businesses to municipalities and to Canada Post. This is an example of where you adopt the official municipality name. And in this case, this is due to a conversion project similar to McGregor's, not exactly the same. In this case, a route alignment is underway in a town called Fremont. So several routes out of the Fremont office deliver to points of call that are in municipalities of Burton, Monroe, and Yates. So right now, the people in the three towns are required to use an RR identifier and the name of Fremont in their mailing address. So you can see on the right there, bottom, let's say R1 Fremont, for example. Some of these points of call in three towns are including their civic addresses, but are still using Fremont as their town name. So as part of the realignment, we will officially convert all the points of call served out of Fremont to civic addressing. So to do this, we must adopt the real names of the other towns in order to reflect where they are physically located. So it says if you look on a map, you will not see their addresses in Fremont, but you will see them in Burton, Monroe, and Yates. So what we're trying to do is align everything with reality where people physically reside. And this is a map of the McGregor area, where there's two municipalities involved, the town of Amherstburg and the town of Essex. So what are the benefits of civic addressing? Well, for the municipality, it standardizes addressing where a resident or business mailing address will be the same as their physical 911 address. So there's no need to maintain two addresses for the residents or businesses in your municipal database. It will also reduce complaints to the municipality or the MP on postal addressing problems. And for the residents, it will eliminate requirement for and confusion around managing two addresses. It will enable more effective use of the internet for customers performing online transactions for shopping, locating services, filing tax returns, etc. It makes it easier to find the right postal code when you're using a postal code lookup. Some of the challenges that we have are gathering the accurate information to determine the scope, as some municipalities can be using different naming conventions. For example, in this area, we have County Road 11 and versus Rocker Road, and they're different for each municipality. We also have to meet timelines and wait for approvals from our internal departments as well as municipalities. We also have to finalize civic addressing lists and determine if any postal code changes will be required. And we need to enter all civic addresses into our database for use by our mailers and residents, and we have a timeline for this. So, for example, I have to have all the addressing into our system by December 7th for the people to be able to see it on our website January 13th. There's a lag of time. We're not instantaneous as far as this goes. So we also have to send out appropriate customer communication, and we usually try to do that at least a month in advance. And then we arrange for a 12-month mail forwarding period for the people so that they'll get free redirection of mail for 1 year. And we have to implement this conversion and manage the transition. So when Canada Post wishes to convert an area from postal addressing to civic addressing, our preference is to partner with the municipality because this will represent a joint effort to the residents. They'll know it's important to the municipality and to themselves. It will allow joint communication to ensure a smoother transition and more opportunity to get the message to residents. It would help to obtain mutual agreement on roles, responsibilities, and timeline so that there are clear expectations by both parties to be documented in council resolution or memorandum of understanding, and it will facilitate the sharing of information, addresses, maps between Canada Post and the municipality. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Val, for that information on, of course, the postal, changing from postal addressing to civic addressing. Any questions of council at this time? Councilor Pilon, followed by Councilor Davies.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I guess what I'm looking for is clarification. And people that live in the Amherstburg area, are they going to have to change it to their address to McGregor? Okay, so make it clear to me. What civic address? What is a civic address?
A civic address is very similar. It's where they physically reside. It's your 911.
Yes.
Our proposal is to keep anyone within the hamlet of McGregor as McGregor, Ontario. But if you're outside of that, as in that Fremont example, you're really not in any boundaries of one small little town, but you are in the town of Amherstburg or the town of Essex. So you have your 911 address and it would say Amherstburg, Ontario.
But it'll still go to the McGregor post office?
With the postal code, it will go to that post office who will sort the mail and deliver it.
Okay, and you're going to eliminate the rural routes?
It's just the RR identifier
that's
as part of your address on your mail.
Why would you do that? To me, that makes it easier for the sorters, to me.
Actually, we sort by address. We should be delivering by address. RR is just a route number.
Right.
It's not actually looking at the letter.
Yeah.
They sort by the 911.
Oh, okay. So
years ago, they would use a name, Mr. Smith.
Yeah.
And they would know, or Mr. Smith, as in that example. But now today, we use the 911.
Yeah, okay. You know what? I'm not totally sure if I totally agree with it, but it's obviously you think that's better for sorting, better to get the correct mail,
better for internet, emergency services. If you have a heart attack and you say I'm having a heart attack and I live at R1 McGregor, they're not going to find your house. If you say I live at 123 Victoria Road, they're going to find you.
Oh, that's true.
Councilor Davies.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I think I also need some clarification because when you use the Fremont or whatever, and then you had these other towns moving it from, is in fact, McGregor is a good example. Half of it is Amherstburg, half of it is Essex. So would those people writing their envelope would still say, you know, Smith Side Road, Amherstburg, or Smith Side Road, McGregor? Because we would run into the same issue. So if you could clarify that, when they go to write up there, and I understand the green number is what you're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
The green number. But what would they be called? What would they be writing on their envelope in McGregor if they lived on one side of Walker Road or the other side of Walker Road?
If they're within the hamlet limits of McGregor,
mm-hmm.
they will still use McGregor, Ontario. And the McGregor postal code. If you live outside of the hamlet limits, then you would either use the one municipality or the other, depending where you reside.
So would you have, sorry, supplementary? So would you have east or west? Because the people on the west side of Walker Road live in Amherstburg, or Amherstburgites, but the people who live on the other side live under the council, the constituency of Essex. So they cross the street, they're in a different civil community as far as governance goes.
The street names are a challenge, as I mentioned, if one municipality has a different name than the other. If you live on the Essex side, if you're in McGregor proper, you would still have your 911 address and McGregor, Ontario. If you live outside that limit, you would use Essex on your mail.
What about if you lived across the street?
In the town, it's still McGregor because your 911 numbering is different on each side of the road. It's even or odd.
I hope you understand what she's saying.
I'm not completely clear because McGregor, half of it is Amherstburg, and half of it is Essex.
But
we've been trying to consult.
She'll show you. No, it's very simple here. Just show her so that she knows. The same thing would apply on the west side of Walker Road.
If you see that map up there,
mm-hmm.
This is Walker Road right here. Okay. This is Essex. This is Amherstburg.
Mm-hmm.
So the numbers, if you live along Walker Road, I forget which is which, but I know that one side of the road is even addressing,
yes.
And the other side is odd addressing. So if you use your 911, it's right down to the point of call with the 911 address. We'll search your mail to the address.
And if you're on the east side, your address would be Essex. If you're on the west side, your address would be Amherstburg. And outside of the hamlet, it would be, of course, Amherstburg. And outside the hamlet on the east side, it would be Essex. Councilor DePasquale.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Just a question on, are you expecting any difficulty in implementing this or this new system? Are you expecting any glitches or problems? Like, you're going to get the information out to people.
Right.
Okay. Should we expect any kind of problems? Like, is there going to be some mix-ups at all, or
we've put projects in like this, much larger than this, and they've gone in fairly well. I mean, people sometimes don't like change, and but they are going to get a free redirection of mail for 1 year.
1 year.
And our databases will, because we can redirect it, so we'll honor it, and we'll forward the mail to the new 911 address. A lot of people in McGregor already use their 911 on the mail, too. It's just the odd person who didn't.
Councilor Pilon.
Well, that 911 number you refer to, that's just your house number, you mean? Right? Yeah.
It's in the desert.
That's your house number.
Yeah.
It's on everybody's address.
Yeah.
And dot, isn't it? Or no?
Not everyone uses it.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. See, I thought everybody used it.
No, some people just write R1 McGregor on the mail.
But as far as the emergency, like amulets, that 70, like, say it's 7289. Well, they know 7th means you're to the west of the 7th or east of the 7th.
Okay.
The 7th means something, okay?
Okay.
Each number
change.
Means something to the emergency people. Right?
Okay.
So, well, yeah, I would say that's definitely a good thing to have on.
Of course. On the report, Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you. I move the presentation be filed as noted.
It's been moved, supported by Councilor DePasquale. Further discussions? If not, all in favor? Opposed? It's carried. Thank you very much, Val.
Thank you.
The next presentation by Dave Gibson regarding cross flow prevention.
Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Been working with Public Works and the Building Department for the past number of months on the cross-connection control program. Just to explain what this program is, just to explain a couple of the terms. A cross-connection is a connection between the municipal drinking water system and any source of contamination. An example would be a fire sprinkler system in a building with chemicals in it that is tied to the water supply, so that when there's a fire, the valve opens and the water comes in and that's the way it's supposed to work. But it is a cross connection. It's a connection of piping that possibly has chemicals in it with the drinking water supply. What is backflow? Because oftentimes you'll hear this as referred to as a backflow program. Drinking water normally flows from the municipal mains into a building and throughout their plumbing system. Backflow is when the water travels from the building out into the municipal water supply. And some things that could cause that, in some industrial buildings, they have pumps hooked up to increase the pressure of the water in the building. If those pumps build the pressure up higher than the pressure in the municipal water main, it pumps water from the building back into the drinking water supply. It can also happen if the pressure in the municipal main drops. For example, if there's a fire, pumpers are pumping water out of the main to fight a fire. It drops the pressure in the buildings that are on that street, so the water can flow from those buildings back into the municipal supply. A couple of examples was in 2005, detergent from a car wash was pumped into the municipal water system of Stratford, Ontario. The drinking water supply was made non-potable for 7 days, and the cost of the municipality was in excess of $100,000. Another example was in the city of Guelph. In 1997, chemical from a petroleum tank flowed back into the municipal water supply. They did have a backflow preventer in place. However, they didn't have a program in place to make sure that that backflow device was actually working. So typical ways that many would be familiar with is a hose connection vacuum breaker that would, it goes on the hose bib or a tap on houses. It's designed to only let water flow one way. There are more complex devices that would be used for different, depending on different hazards. The standard for backflow prevention has been established by the Canadian Standards Association, and the CSA standard outlines, okay, in this situation, this is a high hazard to the municipal drinking supply, you need this device. Another situation, this is not as high a hazard, so this device will suffice. And some of these devices, like a hose connection vacuum breaker, are very simple. You don't have to do anything after they're installed. Others are more complex and they require testing, like the one in Guelph should have been, to make sure that they're operating properly. So it's CSA standard that regulates or specifies what device and how you need to maintain them. The building code requires that all new buildings have cross-connection control, and that the building code references this CSA standard. So all new buildings are brought into compliance with that CSA standard. In order to implement the standard in existing buildings, the municipalities have to pass a cross-connection control bylaw, a bylaw that would say, we expect buildings within this municipality to meet the CSA standard. At the end of the Walkerton inquiry, Justice O'Connor stated, water providers should have active programs to detect and deter cross-contamination. In other words, a program where you would identify where are these cross-connections, and distribution systems should have regularly tested backflow prevention valves that can prevent or at least isolate incursions. In other words, a program where you would go back and make sure that the devices that were installed are still there, that they haven't been tampered with, and that they're still working. The response of the Ministry of Housing was that they increased the requirements in the building code for backflow prevention in new buildings. The Ministry of Environment has been consistently alerting municipalities of the risk of failing to implement a cross-connection control program. And when MOE has audited the town of Amherstburg water supply system, they've noted that Amherstburg does not have a comprehensive cross-connection control program in operation. A survey where we started was with the buildings that the town actually owns. And to take the lead and set the example in the community, we looked at the fact that when we looked at these town-owned properties, we saw that some steps had been taken to install devices, and it was done properly, and they were being tested. But we identified that there are several risks that still existed. Here's one example where you can see a unprotected hose connection or hose, a tap for a hose, right? Just below it, you can see the round white thing on the floor. That's a sewer cleanup. So all you would have to do is have someone who wanted to maybe clean out that sewer line, hook a hose up to that tap, put it down the sewer, and you now have a connection between your drinking water supply and your sewer. One of these taps is tied to potable water or drinkable water. The other one is tied to this chemical tank. So which one was it? It was not identified. It now has been identified. Here's another building in the town. You can see where the town water comes in at the bottom of the photograph. It goes up, and to the left, that white pipe is the drinking water supply for the building. The dark pipe is feeding a fire sprinkler line. That pipe, you can see, comes across to the left, goes up. That's the sprinkler supply to the building. The pipe coming down is a drain for the sprinkler system, and it is tied to a sewage ejector pit. So if you follow that process through, the town's drinking water supply is connected to the sewage ejector pit, which is tied to the sewers out in the road. So what was done, all of these situations were identified and they have all been addressed. None of these risks have been left unaddressed. They all have backflow preventers in place. They've been tested, and they will be tested on an annual basis. 87 new devices were installed. So now there are 77 testable backflow prevention devices installed in town buildings that will be tested on an annual basis. There are more devices installed than need to be tested because some devices are those simple hose connections. They don't need to be tested. The one outstanding item left is to, number one, protect some of the devices that you maybe have seen on the lawn sprinkler systems, the South Gateway, North Gateway, on Alma and Laird. And one option is these expanded metal enclosures that are lockable. And another option is full rock, which can be anchored to the ground as well. And depending on the situation, depending on where the location is, it will be determined which type of protection would be put into place, thinking about aesthetics, for example. So that is where we have come to this point, where all of the town buildings are now in compliance. There are, within the town, 274 commercial properties and 68 industrial properties, according to your GIS records. So, significantly more than the town-owned buildings. And we would expect that we would find similar cross-connections that are unprotected within these buildings. Some examples of buildings that would pose a threat: buildings with boilers for heating. I mentioned the fire sprinkler system. Car washes, like in Stratford funeral homes, use aspirators in embalming that are tied directly to the drinking water supply. Marine docking facilities, commercial laundries, and so on. So the step to to address this would be, first of all, like was done with the town buildings, survey these buildings to determine what risks exist, determine which backflow prevention device would be required, if any, and make sure these devices have been tested. The test results would then be put on a test report form. The information would then be entered into the database along with all of the rest of the information that we already have on the town buildings. And once these are installed, this would be an ongoing program to make sure these devices stay in place and are working. So the next phase would be, if it is council's wish, to pass a cross-connection control bylaw, inform these industrial, commercial, institutional, and multi-residential property owners. For example, large apartment buildings would be addressed, not single-family dwellings. The third step would be to survey these properties, determine what the risks are and what they need to do to come into compliance with a bylaw. Provide the owners a list, show them what they need to do. Issue building permits for the installation of the larger testable devices, then re-inspect to make sure that the work has been done. Enter the data into the computer database and then monitor and require the annual testing of these devices. So, in conclusion, the municipality has a duty of care to provide safe drinking water. We know that there are risks that are out there to Amherstburg's drinking water, and this cross-connection control program is a means of reducing the risks and minimizing the town's liability.
Thank you very much, Dave, for that presentation. I would, just before we open it up for discussion, entertain a motion of council that we bring forward the report on safe drinking water by our chief building official. That would be 13-4 report by Steve Brown.
So moved.
It's been moved by Councillor Sutton. Is there a supporter for that motion? Councillor Davies, any discussion? All in favor? Motion is carried. On the presentation, Councillor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Dave, just going back to the cross-connection devices that would need to be there, I just want to make sure I understand things correctly. So CSA would determine, based upon what mechanism was needed, how often that particular device would need to be tested?
Yes. All devices that are testable must be tested annually.
Okay, so it's annual.
Yes.
All right. And then that I would take it, that cost of testing is borne by the the owner of the building, business, et cetera, correct?
That's correct.
And what do we happen to know what that would run? Like $100, $50?
It varies, but I would say on an average, $150.
Okay.
And if it were determined by the municipality that a device, this is failing here, and they're having to repair this device, do a lot of repairs to get it to pass, the municipality might say, because of the situation, we want you to submit test reports every 6 months, for example. The municipality in the bylaw would have that flexibility to address situations like that.
Just a quick
follow up.
Thank you. And so once we've done the surveys, I would take it the municipality would assist the building owners, business owners with that. Under the bylaw, how long would they have to come into compliance with the bylaw and have their cross-connection device installed?
That would depend on a few things. Number one, the hazard. If there was a high risk hazard, they would be given a short period of time. If it was a lower risk and they had numerous devices, we would take into consideration the financial impact on that business. And so each situation, you'd have to use some good judgment.
Risk.
Yes.
Okay.
I think one of the things that council has to understand here is that, listening to the presentation, if perhaps this would go unattended, it creates a serious hazard to our drinking water. And so what the thing we have to do is act very quickly to address this problem and ensure that you have a cross-connection bylaw in place that would, as it's been stated, Dave has stated, that would support us, because while we may have dead hours in the commercial and industrial sector, if theirs are not addressed, it could compromise our system also. Councillor Davies, followed by Councillor Peel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, I this is a really important project, and certainly knowing what it's like to live in communities and in parts of the world where they don't have clean water, we are very, very lucky to have a program that we can move forward with, so I commend the efforts. A couple of questions. What is involved in the installation, and I guess I'm thinking of the high rises where individuals, elderly and others, might, the water interruption may cause some issues, and hence you know, we need to prepare for that. And then what is the follow-up testing, and how complicated is that? Is this going to be a burden, or can it be done by does it have to be done by a contractor, or can it be done by individual businesses and owners?
The property owner and his contractor would have to coordinate when would be the most appropriate time. Yes, the water does have to be shut off while the device is installed. The installation time would depend on the size of the backflow preventer. In an apartment building, you would probably do that at night to minimize the inconvenience to the residents. Those that would be qualified to test would have to be, number one, a certified plumber with special certification just in this discipline of cross-connection control. Not all plumbers are certified to do this type of work.
Follow up, please.
Thank you very much, and that was a concern that I had. This sounds like it could be, in fact, a very big project, even though our town isn't a large municipality. Is there an opportunity to be able to work with local contractors to become certified in this, so that we have enough qualified people to not only deal with the installation but the testing?
Yes, there are in Amherstburg, not several plumbing contractors who have the certification, but it was a local contractor who brought all of the town's buildings into compliance. So there are local contractors. And currently, for example, the school boards have their buildings in compliance, and they have a contractor from Windsor that does all of their work. So it's quite likely that once Amherstburg would pass a cross-connection control bylaw, there would be contractors who would say, yes, maybe I should get my certification. They would certainly have that opportunity.
Councillor Pilon?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just, I think this is an excellent program, because I can think of different areas that there could be a problem, so that's good. Glad to see we're dealing with it. Just a couple of things that I was kind of inquisitive on. One of your pictures in our own municipal, where you showed the water main coming in, one pipe went to drinking water, and the other pipe went up to the fire. Where would that cross flow preventer go?
It went on the line going to the fire sprinkler system. That's all you wanted to isolate.
Yes.
The plumbing within the building would be just like the plumbing within your house. Mm-hmm. Right? And they are already addressed in different ways to prevent backflow prevention. So it was, they go to
you separate them.
Yes, to isolate. What you want to isolate, that's where it goes.
Yeah.
And sometimes that is a little challenging, but the contractor was able to address all of the town's issues.
Okay. And just one other question was, I'm thinking about our water fill stations. Were they all done too?
Yes.
They were all done.
Everything was done. They have toilets. 87 of them. Councilor DePasquale, followed by Councilor Puget.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a question on, so I get this straight, as far as this bylaw, residential is not included in this right now. Will it be eventual? It doesn't have to be.
Normally, there are no testable devices in a residence. Everyone's house has a backflow prevention device. Every kitchen sink is basically a backflow preventer is an air gap. So that faucet on your sink or your bathroom laboratory cannot extend past the flood rim of that basin. So you've got an automatic backflow preventer just by that air gap. The other places that we have backflow prevention in residences are the outside hose connections. You don't want to have a garden hose, for instance, into a pail of soapy water or insecticide or whatever, and then a fire pump comes down the street to fight a fire, and all that reverse flow, basically that hose will suck whatever that is in that pail into the municipal drinking water system. So that was put into the building code somewhere around 1989. And then our water meters themselves have backflow preventers on them too.
Okay. Councilor Puget.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My question has been answered.
What's council's pleasure? Councilor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move receipt of the presentation and that we receive a report from Steve Brown, Chief Building Official, dated November the 16th, regarding cross-connection control program. And further, that council proceed to hold a public meeting for the purpose of bringing forth the regulating bylaw.
Supported by Councilors Pilon. Further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you, gentlemen. Next.
On to reports. The first report, a report by Rick Daly regarding tender results, Victoria Street Cultural Center renovations, is to be deferred until November 29th.
Motion to defer this report on the renovation at the Victoria Street Cultural Center. Councilor Pilon, your motion?
Motion to defer.
Yeah. Okay, they're supportive for that motion. Deputy Mayor Sutherland supports that motion. No discussion on a deferred motion. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
A report by Stephen Brown regarding termite infestation incident as deferred from November 7th.
What's Council's pleasure relative to that report? Councilor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move a receipt of that report in concurrence with the recommendation.
Councilor Pilon supports that motion. Further discussion at this time by members of council. Councilor Puget.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wondered if we could add that all future homeowners be notified of a possible infestation and when they were applying for a building permit.
Steve, would you respond to that, please?
Okay, with respect to new construction, now that we've had confirmed report that the termites are in the area. Under the Ontario Building Code, there are provisions in localities where termites are known to occur, and there are clearances between wood elements, top plates of foundation walls have to be protected. There's a whole series of items that are required to be put in, and what we will do is on the approved drawings that are returned to the permit holder, we will put these requirements on it, or we will refer to the appropriate sections of the building code.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you to Steve. Steve, would that be for all of the new buildings or just in that area?
No, that would be for all the building. And the other thing is that the extra items that are required are not that much different than what's in the building code now. Basically, the top of the foundation wall has to be 6 inches above grade. Any wood that's in contact with the ground has to be pressure treated. So there are a few other measures here that increase the clearances of crawl spaces to the ground. Typically, the houses that that are being constructed in town now, very rarely are there crawl spaces. And if there are crawl spaces, the crawl spaces are covered with concrete. Not usually you have a ground covered crawl space these days in a house. It's where we have additions that we have to be especially careful. Some of the buildings currently may not meet that requirement, some of the older buildings. And when people come in for permits for additions, they will be notified that they should check the existing part of their buildings for that, and possibly recommend that they have a qualified expert come in and test the soil and take a look at the foundation wall.
On the motion, all in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried unanimously.
Report by Stephen Brown regarding a proposed nuisance smoke bylaw as deferred from November 7th, 2011.
Again, with council's pleasure relative to that report. Councilor DePasquale, if you would.
Your Worship, I have a motion to put forward here.
Mm-hmm.
I move that council receives a report from Steve Brown concerning smoke emissions originating from solid fuel burning appliances such as wood stove and fireplaces. Further, that administration be directed to use the Town of Oakville nuisance bylaw, option number one of Mr. Brown's report, and also Environment Canada municipal bylaw model to research and suggest changes that would not allow a total ban, but a progressive penalty system, starting with a warning and escalating each other time of violation.
Is there a supporter for that motion? Deputy Mayor Sutherland supports that motion. Discussion at this time from council. Councilor DePasquale, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In regards to this situation, I took quite an interest in reading through a lot of the stuff that was given to us. I think we should be progressive in this situation. Our people did as much as they could over an eight-year period until finally it had to go to the courts. And I just don't agree that citizens should have to spend $10,000 or $12,000 or $15,000 to try to solve this in a civil court, which would take a number of years. In the case of the court decision that was made, these people moved out of their homes, and they suffered quite a bit over the situation. It couldn't be brought under control because I understand the Ministry of Environment, even though they may have jurisdiction, they didn't take much interest in this themselves. So I think with the situation we have with smoking and other burning, etc., I think the motion doesn't restrict us. It's not too strict. It's reasonable. I spoke to Mr. Brown about wood-burning boilers. He's working on some extra things. Can you explain that to us, Steve?
Some other municipalities have a large-scale wood boiler. Basically, they're usually used in the agricultural areas. It's basically a standalone boiler. They measure maybe 8 feet by 8 feet. And what they do is they burn solid fuel, which is usually firewood. And they're usually used in farms to heat out buildings and farms. You can heat more than one building with them. And I have spoken with the people at Chatham Kent that have this type of a bylaw. And the way I'd like to address that is to, when we do our next housekeeping bylaw in the zoning bylaw, we would institute setbacks for this type of equipment, so that the only place you could install one would be a large piece of property in the ag zone. We do have one installed on Creek Road right now, and I haven't heard any complaints with respect to that unit. And incidentally, the newer solid fuel burning appliances have CSA approval, and most of them have an EPA rating. But however, it is important that the proper fuel is being used in those, in any solid fuel burning appliance. Should be properly cured dry firewood, no painted wood, no pressure treated wood, of course, and no real garbage. You want to have dry, kiln dry, it doesn't have to be kiln dry, it could be air dried firewood. And in the EPA graded stoves, when they are working properly, you see no smoke, no visible smoke. You will get some emissions when the chimneys are cold, when they're first started up, and when after you quit fueling them and they're burning down, you'll get a little bit of non-combusted material out. But for the most part, these new EPA appliances burn very clean. and just taking a look at some of the advertisements in the local papers with respect to these stoves, most of them do show an EPA rating.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In reference to, say, somebody decided to put one in today in a subdivision, what would our recourse be to control the, there wouldn't be much room there for one of these, but I think people are starting to, as fuel costs go up, natural gas and hydro, I think there's going to be probably an increase in wood burning. So is there any control over that now?
Well, under the Ontario Building Code, the any solid fuel burning appliance has to be CSA approved, and there are specific requirements as far as chimney height. But it is allowed under the Ontario Building Code for both wood stoves and fireplaces.
Well, all of those that are on the market for sale are CSA approved.
That's right, and you still need a building permit to install the wood stove.
Sure.
And also, we require the every wood stove installation to be inspected by a certified wet inspector. Most insurance companies now are requiring any installation of a solid fuel burning appliance to be certified by that type of person as well.
Counts? Yeah.
Just one.
Go ahead.
Thank you. There were only three complaints, according to your report, over a 9 year or several years.
Since 1994, basically, I checked my notes. We may have received some telephone ones, but any written one was three in the last 18 years.
And I understand in your report that Oakville has had very few complaints.
Oakville doesn't use that bylaw for nuisance smoke. I had spoken with their bylaw enforcement people, and they said that it was very onerous to try to enforce that bylaw with respect to nuisance smoke. I think they use that more for nuisance light, where lights are shining on neighbors' property. That's a lot easier. In fact, we have that in our zoning bylaw, and we had to enact that not too long ago on another site.
But of course, with the lights, there's no health hazards to that. In the situation we had, I mean, the smoke was obviously blowing right into their homes, from what I understand.
Councilor Davies. Followed by Councilor Peters.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You know, I really struggled over this one because, of course, I understand the health hazards, cardiovascular and respiratory and et cetera, the Canadian Lung Association. Everyone has opposed contaminant smoke in relationship to health hazards. The issue is, and I think you raised it, there's only been three complaints in 18 years, did you say? My concern is that, you know, if we go ahead with a bylaw, it not only is it expensive to put in, if the bylaw that's not going to get used because pretty well everything is coming up to code, then we have to do that balance. I would, at this moment in time, I'm struggling with whether or not we would be better off having a really good educational program, because it's probably not so much the appliance that is being put into either a home or into a, and I am concerned about people who it's their primary source of heat rather than a decor thing, but it's what they put in the fireplaces, and that's what's the dangerous thing. And I think that sometimes people think, oh, I can just throw that plastic carton in, or I can just throw that styrofoam box in, or whatever, not understanding the toxins that are coming out of that. That I would rather probably, as a community, put more energy into educating people of the risks they're doing to themselves and to their neighbors and their children by burning such items. Certainly there's still the bonfires on the edge of town, and if it's clean wood and solid and so forth, but my concern is the contaminants that are going in, and I don't think we can easily follow that with a bylaw, because by the time a bylaw officer gets out, it's already been burned. But I'm debating whether or not I'd rather be spending our tax dollars on educating people of the dangers of not using their appliances, their qualified appliances safely, rather than going after a bylaw that may in fact be redundant because the market has changed and people aren't using the appliances that have been a danger in the past.
Councilor Peel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilor,
I think,
Pugier, did you have your hand up? Followed by Councilor Pugier.
I think Councillor DePasquale kind of hit the nail on the head a little bit. Like, I think some action is required, and I understand the Oakville bylaw is just too hard to even pursue and to try to enforce, obviously. But I think there needs to be some work on this, and we need something to come back, because I understand we only had 3 occasions in the last so many years, but what if this was to happen again and we do nothing? We have nothing. And I think we need to try to make some kind of change, try to come up with something that can possibly help our residents. And I think this is the only way to do it, is to refer it back and see where we go from here.
Councillor Puget.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I concur with both Councillor DePasquale and Councillor Pialon's statements. I think that we have to keep our people safe and our residents safe. And I think to do that, we need a stricter bylaw. I understand where Steve's coming from, but I really do not want to have any of our residents go through what the last family went through. And I think it's unfair to state that we really can't do something and that they should go to litigation. It's too expensive and it's just too timely for them to get an answer when something should be done immediately for them. And I too, if the Oakville bylaw won't work, then I would ask administration to go back and to search for another bylaw that would be more compatible for our community.
Councillor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have no problem with the report coming back, certainly in support of the motion. But at the same time, I think it's important to realize that we can do many things, but one thing we cannot do is legislate a good neighbor. And I think in these situations, that's what happens a lot of times, is neighbors get into disputes and it ends up in the courts rather than common sense dictating the day. I think if there was something in place that a resident could turn to in terms of municipal bylaw that would have put a stop to it immediately, that would have been helpful. And I think what we need to do is to find out if such a step exists. Is there something clear-cut that you can put in to stop that? Or at the end of the day, was the course of action that followed inevitable because the neighbors couldn't work out their own dispute? So if we can be of help, that's great. I think we should research that. But I think there's also that wisdom that says, you know, I think we also have to hold up that sometimes the best solution is for 2 neighbors to talk across the fence and come to their own solution at the end of the day. But we'll see what the report holds, and we'll go from there.
Could we have that motion read back? Have you got it there, Bart?
Yes.
And make sure you give a copy, too.
Okay, I move that council receives the report from Steve Brown concerning smoke emissions originating from solid fuel burning appliances, such as wood stoves and fireplaces. Further, that administration be directed to use the Town of Oakville nuisance bylaw, as mentioned in option number 1 in Mr. Brown's report, and Environment Canada municipal bylaw model to research and suggest changes that would not allow a total ban, but a progressive penalty system, starting with a warning and escalating each time a violation.
And it's been supported by Deputy Mayor Sutherland. We've had lengthy discussions on the motion. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried unanimously. Next item.
A report by Lori Bratt regarding Block 118, Plan 12M397 within Whalen Avenue Road, dedication and bylaw.
Lori, have you got anything you want to add to this?
No, Mr. Mayor, unless there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Certainly. On the report, Councillor Pialon.
Motion to receive and concur with the request.
There is supporter for that motion. Councillor Puget supports that motion. Any discussions? All in favor? Motion is carried.
13.4 was dealt with. The next report is a report by Lou Zarlinga dated November 17th, 2011 regarding tender results for Brock Street sanitary sewer relocation from Kemp Street to Simcoe Street, former Perry Street right-of-way.
Councillor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We move that report be received and further that council accept the consulting engineer's recommendation to award the contract to the lowest bidder, being Coco Paving Incorporated, for the amount of $132,257 plus HST for the Brock Street sanitary sewer relocation.
There's support for that motion. Councillor Puget supports that motion. Further discussion? Councillor Puget, followed by Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you to Lou.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's good news, right? That it came in at $150,000 instead of the $250,000 that we budgeted for. That's an extra $100,000.
Great news.
You better get it done before the price goes
up. Get that done tomorrow, Lou.
Did you already hear that? No. On the
Councillor Puget answered the mic.
On the motion, all in favor? Motion is carried.
A report by Liz Arlinga regarding tender results for County Road 20 North Water Main replacement for Malden Road, 1,200 meters south.
Again, what's the Councillor Pedon?
Motion to receive the report and further the council accept the consulting engineer's recommendation to award the contract to the lowest bidder, being DeMore Construction, for an amount of $270,723.85 plus HST for County Road 20 water main replacement from Malden Road, 1,200 meters south.
There is support for that motion. Deputy Mayor Sutherland supports that motion. Further discussions? Deputy Mayor Sutherland, followed by Councillor Puget.
Yes, I'd like to just comment again that the tender came in underneath the bids or the original, so I think that's great.
Councillor Puget.
Oh. Yes, did it come in? Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Did it come in below or 42,000 above?
You mean below?
HST above.
Yep.
53,000.
Well, that's HST.
Yeah.
That was HST added to it after. That was just the cost, not the HST. Okay. On the motion, all in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
Report 14.3, report by Liz Arlinga, dated November 17th, 2011, regarding Domino's Pizza request for temporary 15-minute parking.
Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that Council receive the report from Lou regarding the request from Domino's to provide a 15-minute parking spaces at 145 Sandwich Street South, and further that Council approve the request to provide for 2 15-minute parking spaces in front of 145 Sandwich Street with hours limited so as not to interfere with the high school activities during regular school hours.
There's support for that motion. Councillor Puget supports that motion. Discussion. Any discussion? Councillor DePasquale?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd just like to say that I'm glad to see that that came through for this business owner. I hope they try to accommodate him as much as possible.
Councillor Pedon?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just real quickly, just to say that I appreciate all the work that Lou had done on this, but I think we need to ensure that the owner or the business operator is under the understanding that this is a temporary posting. We don't know how long, because obviously there is some work going to be done on Sam Reach, but he can have it as long as things remain the same. Okay.
Okay. On the motion, all in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried unanimously. Next item.
A report by Liz Arlinga regarding municipal parking lots tender results for winter control.
With Council's pleasure relative to those reports. Councillor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move that we receive that report and that we accept the recommendation and not accept any of the tenders submitted, and further that Council accept the recommendation to continue to complete winter control of municipal parking lots using Public Works Department forces.
There's support for that motion. Councillor Puget supports that motion. Discussions, Councillor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to thank Lou for doing that work, because a lot of times, you know, we do get questions regarding whether, you know, what the cheapest route to go is, and it's really nice to actually have the hard data in front of us that shows that our guys not only do a great job, but they do the most cost-effective job as well.
Any discussion further? If not, all in favor? Opposed? Motion again is carried unanimously.
Report 14.5, a report by Liz Erlinger regarding sidewalks and pathways, tender results for winter control.
Again, Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you. I move Council receives the report from Lou regarding the sidewalk and pathway winter control, tender results, and further Council accept the recommendation of administration and not accept any of the further tenders submitted. And further, the Council accept the recommendation of administration to continue to complete winter control of municipal sidewalks and pathways using PWD forces.
There is support for that motion. Councillor Sutton supports that motion. Discussions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. That brings us to consent reports. Heather?
Consent reports. There is one report listed.
It's Council's pleasure under consent reports. Councillor Sutton.
Move receipt.
It's been moved, supported by Councillor Pilon. Discussions, if any? Hearing none. Deputy Mayor Sutherland?
Just a question, are we on 20.1?
Yes. 19.1.
19.1.
All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
Consent correspondence 20.1. We have three items listed.
It's Council's pleasure. Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move receipt of the reports 1 and 3, and I would like to make a motion on item 2. Could I do that at this time?
Or you sure. No, we'll deal with 1 and 3 first, and then we'll deal with that one separate. Motion is to, what was your motion?
Receive 1 and
to
3.
To receive 1 and 2 under, 1 and 3 under consent. There is support for that motion. Councillor Sutton supports that motion. Discussions on that particular motion? If not, all in favor? Go ahead. You got to raise your hand so I can see you.
Are we on the one regarding the of the three letters of correspondence? I'd like to discuss the one, Mayor Hurst, about Linda Saxon. I just want to ask, was this council or the previous council provided with supporting documentation that Mrs. Saxon requested regarding the UCC Youth Center? That it's a fully accessible facility.
Did we
receive?
Yes, she was.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
She was.
She received it, of course.
Yeah.
Was there supporting documentation with the letter that she received?
It'd be unfair for. You got the letter from her.
We got the letter from Brenda.
From Brenda, there it is.
Yeah. There was a response from Brenda in the email.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think she was referring to the letter that was sent. May I speak on November 8th? And
what's the date of that one? November the 9th? This was dated November the 9th. I think there were several emails submitted, and it was responded back, and then on the 9th, this one was sent to her. I think if you've got a concern relative to that, you can speak with Brenda when she returns. She's the one that did, and she certainly would make that available to you.
Regarding a response from Mrs. Saxon, she was concerned with the supporting documentation from Cindy Burkhar, and it was dated November 8th, 2011. And I didn't see any response pertaining to that. But I understand it's unfair to question Carol about that, so I will call.
Sure, and we can give that information for
it. Just listed here. There's something else.
But give that information to
the agenda.
Okay. On the motion for the receipt of consent correspondence 1 and 2, all in favor?
1 and
3. 1 and 3, excuse me. All in favor? Carried. Next one is item number 2 from the Township of Molmar that we dealt with already at the county level. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That's what I was just going to point out, is that I move that we receive and concur with the recommendation and the resolution from MoMA.
They're supportive for that. Councillor Puget, there's no further discussions. All in favor? Motion is carried. Other minutes.
Consent other minutes. There is one set of minutes, Coan Park Committee minutes.
Councillor Sutton.
Move that the Coan Park Committee minutes be received.
Supported by Councillor Pilon. Any discussion? Councillor Puget.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think, Robert, maybe you might be able to answer this. On page 192, they state the diamond groomer was only $5,000, and that was compared to ours at $33,000. Is that what ours was in accounts payable?
No, I don't think it was. Maybe Rick could speak to that. As far as the diamond groomer that we were looking for out there was roughly $5,000. I don't know with what more far advanced the one you got from the town. I don't think it was $33,000, was it?
No, it wasn't. And the one that Cohen Park is asking for was their old one. So, yes.
Just further on that, the town of Amherstburg had three groomers. There was one old one kind of pushed at the back, so. Cohen committee asked if they could borrow it. We're gonna do the repairs on it, which they've already done, and they'll build Cohen, and then we'll have this groomer out there to use. It's more or less on it's half the park is Amherstburg's, but it's still be the town of Amherstburg groomer, but we're gonna use it. Yes. Okay.
Follow up.
Thank you. That's a supplementary. On page 169 of our report regarding accounts paid, it states diamond groomer $33,115.68. So I thought that was pretty big difference between $5,000 and $33,000.
Go ahead.
That was the tractor as well. Like the whole piece of equipment is the tractor and the groomer.
You understand? Are you thinking it's somebody? It's the appliance they're talking about, the equipment.
Yeah, but in here it just says diamond groomer for $33,000.
Yeah. Sure. Okay.
Okay.
Did we get a motion?
We have a motion on consent, other minutes, yes.
All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried.
Consent. Correspondence, documentation, a letter from Brad Robert.
Yeah, we've got one on under this one here.
Okay, you want to do that now?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to deal with the consent correspondence supplementary agenda item with a letter from Brad.
It was an add-on, or what do they call it? A late bloomer?
A late bloomer, yes, sorry.
That's it.
Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
I move that the correspondence be received. I understand it's already in the building department's area.
They're supportive for that motion. Councillor Sutton, further dialogue. Councillor Puget.
I just wonder if this home has been designated historical.
Steve, do you
know? Through you, Mr. Mayor, the home has not been designated under the Ontario Heritage Act. The home appears on the Heritage Registry, which means that there is a 60-day demolition period that has to be, before demolition permit can be issued, 60 days has to pass after council has been notified of the intent to demolish.
Okay. Yep. On the motion, there's no further discussion. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is passed unanimously.
Other minutes, traffic committee minutes for the meeting of October 18th, 2011.
Councillor Pilon.
Thank you. Motion to receive and concur with the traffic committee's recommendation that Elm and Maple Streets be designated as alternate parking.
Alternate
monthly parking, yeah.
Okay. They're supportive for that. Deputy Mayor Sutherland supports that motion. Further discussions? Hearing none. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Unfinished business? New business? Report from in-camera?
Reporting from the in-camera session of Monday, November 21st, Council heard two items, a personal matter about an identifiable individual, and a second item, litigation or potential litigation There's nothing further to report on these items.
For your information. The other issue we come up to is, of course, any notices of motions. No notices of motions. That brings us to confirmatory bylaws. We've got one there. Confirmatory. Councilor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move that bylaw 2011-97, being a bylaw to confirm all resolutions of the municipal council meetings held on November 14th, 15th, and 21st, 2011. Be read three times, finally passed, and the mayor and clerk be authorized to sign the same thereto.
And moved, is there a supporter for that motion? Councilor Davies supports that motion. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. This item on the agenda is adjournment. Deputy Mayor Sutherland, moved to adjourn. Is there a supporter for that motion? Councilor Pino. All in favor? Motion is carried. Thank you and have a